Anyway, this report has us achieving artificial superintelligence by 2027 to 2028, and this is kind of the roadmap that's laid out to get there. So from later on this year, mid-2025, into 2026, we have the explosion of AI agents and the automation of research. You layer that with the compute expansion and the explosion, which will all lead to, in late 2026 to early 2027, what the report calls superhuman coders. Then you throw in the global cyber warfare and cyber theft of technology and geopolitical actors. And the report says that by mid-2027 to 2028, we've really reached an intelligence explosion, and we've officially reached superintelligence because of it. What is up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the AI Marketing Navigator. This is your daily compass in the ever-evolving world of AI marketing. Okay, navigators, we have another Daily Digest episode coming in hot for you today. And right off the bat, I'm going to say that I officially regret switching over from Android to iPhone as of today, because the first bit of news we're going to talk about is the announcement from Gemini, or Google DeepMind, about Gemini Live. And this is a new feature for Android devices, apparently available on the Pixel 9 and the Galaxy S25. And a long time ago on the AI Marketing Navigator, we did an episode about Project Astro, which was the Google, or I believe DeepMind, project behind their vision-capable AI, the AI assistant that you could feed your camera input from your phone or your device into, or share your screen with, and they can literally describe or interact with things in real time to you as you are seeing them, or as the AI is seeing them. And this is the technology that is powering Gemini Live, real-time vision-enabled assistance from the Gemini model. So you have that real-time camera integration. I mean, again, imagine having that brilliant borderline genius assistant in your pocket, able to describe anything that you see or you're encountering in a day, or have a conversation about it and learn about it with you. This is the type of use case that we kind of talked about with Project Astra. And that just became a reality with the launch of Gemini Live. Not only can you feed it, again, the real-time visual input, but you can show it what's on your screen. So you can now use it as an assistant for what you're seeing or you're researching on your phone, whatever you might be shopping for, whatever apps or tasks you can now work with it on. And it will support a multilingual interaction as well. It can be accessed through the latest version of the Gemini app. You will need an advanced subscription. And Google has actually outlined their own kind of series of recommended use cases for the tool. The organization one, I kind of find kind of funny. It says that if you have a cluttered or maybe dirty space, you can point your camera at it and ask Gemini to help you with suggestions on how to best organize it. It kind of makes me wonder what people would do if Gemini just told them to throw away all of their stuff or something like that. But also creative brainstorming. Again, you might be looking at or something or working on something, and you can brainstorm with Gemini about it. You have shopping assistance. And it's funny, shopping is always thrown in there as one of the use cases for any of these assistants, that and travel as well, which is being suggested for this agent as well, which is being suggested for this Gemini Live as well. I don't know, for the shopping thing, I kind of enjoy the process of like finding the product, clicking the buy button. So sometimes I wonder if having an agent that you can just say, hey, will you look for this and buy this for me, is going to replace the preferable or the traditional shopping experience for some people. I think there are certain shopping tasks, maybe like, will you order the same set of groceries for me on the grocery app or through the grocery app, that type of stuff. But maybe like a real-time shopping assistant, now that I think about it, that can like, that will literally just show you things and you can just say, hey, I would like to, let's buy that one. Let's buy that one. That sounds like it might be kind of the use case that's being suggested here. And I could definitely see that as well. Also just basic troubleshooting, just being able to point the Gemini app at something on something you're working on, like your car or something that you're changing the oil, and you point the Gemini Live app and you ask it and have it describe how to change the oil to you or something like that. And as far as marketing goes, we've talked a lot about what these vision-enabled AI assistants mean for marketing, and we're going to talk about that a little bit here in a second. But first, the second bit of news also involves a vision-enabled AI model and vision capabilities. The news about the updates, or upgrades, I should say, to Microsoft's Copilot assistants. And they are pretty significant, and they sound pretty amazing. They again have me feeling some FOMO for something I don't use very often in the case of Copilot. So this might just very well have me diving into Copilot again soon to explore these features. So the first of these features is personalization features, as well as kind of an extended memory. So Copilot can remember specific user preferences, specific interactions or chats you've had with it, personal search or personal milestones, according to some sources. So adding a lot more context to its suggestions for you. So it sounds particularly interesting in that case. Not to worry, apparently the user can have full control over what is being shared and what is being stored and what is not. It can also customize the appearance with appearances of Copilot, so including animated characters, something I think is super fun. And there's some pretty amazing stuff in this list, but that's high up there on the reasons that have me wanting to check out Copilot to be able to animate my AI assistant. But I think by far the most interesting one, and to continue our vision AI theme, via the Copilot app, you can now analyze real-time visuals through your phone camera, just like the launch of Gemini Live. And here again, we have companies basically trading launches back-to-back of the same features on the same day. Again, it's almost too much to keep up with as a consumer, and it's certainly too much to keep up with now as a practitioner and an adopter of the technology. All you can do is, again, focus on what is practically useful for you day in and day out, and we're just going to try and do our best to keep up with it because that's really all you can do. Okay, so now what we have talked a lot about in the past is what this necessarily means for marketing or could mean for marketing. And it could just be as something as practical as the return of QR codes, which we are 100% seeing right now. But now we have the oncoming wave, I think, of visual-enabled AI assistants being able to pick up these QR codes and just immediately either be able to start reading off a page or something like that about a brand. Maybe this does mean that we all need to include QR codes in our signage or logos that are scannable. Or now that I think about it, the AI is probably just going to be able to scan your logo. The visual assistant sees your logo. It's going to hopefully be able to start describing your businesses and services right away. So it's really just going to come down to probably one thing, the AI, but and the other thing being search engine optimization, SEO, or search everywhere optimization in this case. Anyway, I'm rambling and just doing stream of thought now, so you have to excuse me there. But we have talked again about not only what mixed reality and virtual reality could mean for user experiences as far as marketing goes, but a lot of that kind of transfers to vision-enabled AI assistance as well, as I think. So just one more way that customers and consumers and purchasers of our products and services are going to be enabled in their purchasing decisions and in their research abilities and in their use of technology. So however that channel can be used to better communicate how you can help them, I think, is where we need to focus for sure. Okay, back to this Copilot upgrade. You have the vision capability in the Copilot Assistant now. You also have the desktop level awareness, so the ability to see what's on your desktop screen. And in some cases, there are certain actions that Gemini can now perform. Big surprise, booking reservations or travel is one of the suggested use cases. Again, I don't know why all these companies think that one's so popular. I guess the rest of the world travels a lot more than I do. And maybe it's just because it's kind of a pain to go in there to actually just schedule it all yourself. It's just not very fun to do. Maybe that's why they always suggest it. So now we have Copilot beginning to take agentic actions in the browser as well. There is also some productivity and creativity focused features being launched. Again, just a massive release here from Copilot. Something called Pages, which is a workspace, the Pages workspace, and kind of acts as like a collaborative canvas style workspace area. Deep research mode, which is designed to do just what the other deep research modes that we've talked about in Gemini and OpenAI are designed to do, which is handle more complex research-based tasks by being able to retrieve a bunch of different information sources or data types and things like that. Now, it would appear that Gemini Live has Copilot beat as far as the release and the accessibility of their launch in these two cases. Looks like Copilot, with their new assistant features, they're being released gradually to certain users, should be rolling out in the next couple of months, whereas Gemini Live is available to users on those devices now with an update to the Gemini app. So some very heated competition here for sure in the case of Copilot to get this rolled out as quickly as they can. And it is very much becoming the next set of standards now for general AI assistance to be able to accomplish all these things, vision, all of this under one umbrella. Okay, and then last bit of news here. We are going straight back to the world of science fiction, and I guess I'm going to say cautious science fiction. We're starting to talk once again about potential negative AI sentiment or AI alarmist viewpoints. And I try to avoid saying AI doomsdayer because the gravity of that seems a little heavy at any given point in time, but that could just be my denial of this very issue that we're going to talk about today. So I might as well just embrace it and say that AI doomsdayers will be very upset to know that a recent report released from former OpenAI researchers, one named Daniel Cocotaglo, along with collaborators Scott Alexander and Eli Leafland, essentially forecasts the next few years of AI progress given the current state of AI, but particularly our development and our proceeding into AGI, artificial general intelligence, and then ASI, artificial superintelligence. And we've talked about these concepts multiple times on the show before. If you're listening to this show, you have likely heard of them, but this could be anybody's first episode, anybody's first exposure to the concept. So artificial general intelligence can be considered AI that's basically capable of performing completely autonomous actions that match or surpass a human's capability across basically all cognitive knowledge work without human supervision or kind of direction. There are also some definitions that equate it to like the literal amount of actual business work that can be done as well. The current straight up definition right from Wikipedia, if you were to Google AGI right now, is that it is a type of highly autonomous artificial intelligence that would match or surpass human capabilities across most or all economically valuable cognitive work. Then we have artificial superintelligence, which officially surpasses and far, in all likelihood, far surpasses human capabilities and intelligence across all fields of knowledge. Anyway, this report has us achieving artificial superintelligence by 2027 to 2028. And this is kind of the roadmap that's laid out to get there. So from later on this year, mid-2025 into 2026, we have the explosion of AI agents and the automation of research, which we're literally seeing every day and we're talking about every day on this show. And the report gives the examples of this happening as well for the agents. For instance, it's all about the coding automation that we're seeing and the performance of encoding that these agents are achieving right now on coding benchmarks. You layer that with the compute expansion and the explosion in investments in data centers and in chip research and development and things like that, which will all lead to in late 2026 to early 2027, what the report calls superhuman coders, reaching proficiency in coding at up to 30 times the human speed, apparently. And then you consider parallel agents, something that we literally just started talking about this week. And you consider the capability of these agents being able to be deployed at the level of thousands and thousands of human engineers. So you should really check out the report. It goes into a lot of detail about the hypothetical trajectory that business and economics of AI could take in multiple countries. For instance, in the late 2026, early 2027 timeframe, they discuss how China could push even further and deeper and faster into AI. And then you throw in the global cyber warfare and cyber theft of technology and geopolitical actors and all of that. And the report says that by mid-2027 to 2028, we've really reached an intelligence explosion and we've officially reached super intelligence because of it. Now, the report outlines all of the well-known risks of this progress, the job displacement, potential AI arms race as far as the military industrial complex goes. But the primary, and I should say the biggest risks are the existential ones to humanity, like the potential misalignment problem where AI demonstrates a disregard for the well-being of humanity, is to put it nicely, and in an innocent way that basically means AI will simply stop acting within its guardrails. Because the minute that happens, it could possibly do something like create biological weapons, or it could try to sway the geopolitical landscape, which is all discussed in this report here as well. The report suggests that if we reach this critical area and this critical time, there will be a critical time, I should say, that where this misalignment or alignment either happens or doesn't, and we could either succeed in keeping AI aligned, and we can do a lot in preventing maybe not the achievement of ASI, but the loss of control of it if we do succeed, or we could fail. As the report also suggests, and as we've talked about in the past, the only thing that's going to get there or get to a point of success in that case is global communication, coordination, transparency, all of these things that it's kind of unfortunate to say that the governments of the world usually haven't been super great at in the past. They all really need to be a priority when it comes to the development of AI systems. So also open source research needs to be emphasized and protected as well. Absolutely. Now, to lighten it up a little bit and to add some healthy skepticism, there are detractors to the report as well. The report itself is all somewhat speculative. For instance, two of the report's own authors disagree as to the And they disagree pretty significantly as to the actual probability of a catastrophic outcome. Daniel Cocotaglo apparently estimates a 70% chance of catastrophe, while Scott Alexander only predicts a 20% chance. There are also other people who believe we have in fact hit this wall with data. And we've talked about kind of the scaling law before and whether there's a training wall or a data wall that will be encountered. Some people think that there is and that it doesn't exist. I mean, and other people that thinks that it does exist. So there's some debate as to whether or not that's been hit or if there will be this unlimited ability to scale or grow these systems. Anyway, the reason I mention this is because it's safe to say the future of AI, I think, will no doubt change the course of humanity, the course of work, the course of the work that we do. And regardless of what you think of the accuracy of the report, really, I think the conversation around AI safety absolutely needs to happen among any community or any users of the technology. So I for one, am glad that it is. Okay, that does it for today's episode. If you enjoyed the show or found it useful in any way, please do me a favor and follow on Spotify or subscribe on your podcast platform of choice. A review on top of that would be even more appreciated and by far is the most helpful thing you could do for the show. Also, if you're watching on YouTube, make sure to hit that subscribe button and turn on all notifications so you get notified each day when our episode drops. Until then, and as always, thank you so much for joining me, and remember to stay curious, stay consistent, and keep navigating forward. Bye.